We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I am your host, Beast, who digests raw news and excretes subpar humour, Matt Harvey. It is, of course, December, the end of the year of our existential crisis, 2022. And we are celebrating December with United Nations International Anti-Corruption Day, where we, at The Bearer of Weird News, will be partaking in the celebrating by undertaking the age-old practice of vigilante justice. That's right, we will be implementing a series of former gig workers to undertake the job of distributing justice. They'll be distributing justice to the very politicians who allowed the laws to be manipulated to the degree that they needed to take on the very means of their anger, the very inspiration for their theme, an old Deliveroo outfit. See, the backpack would be like an extended utility belt containing the instruments of justice, and rather than turn on some sort of bat signal, they'd be summoned by use of a gig economy style app. They'd be known as the contractors. As a result of the new vigilante justice system, we will be officially skipping Human Rights Day in 2022. Those who allow corruption to fester are indeed less than human, but they still technically fall under the protection of human rights. But this will be no different to how we normally approach human rights in Australia, with the exception being we are actually aiming it at the powerful for a change. So that'll be nice. Now, if you are interested in supporting the show, of course, I am doing live shows of my storytelling stand-up show, Wage Against the Machine. I will be at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in a little gallery called No Vacancy, in Newcastle at the Newcastle Comedy Club, and in the Wellington Fringe at Te Awara as part of the Wellington Fringe Festival. Of course, I am still looking for new festivals to lock some stuff in to get around. So again, if you know of any festivals in your area that you think I might be interested in checking out, please let me know, and I will be traveling around a little bit more this year. I mean, look forward to it. I think it should be good fun. And we're going to try something new for this episode, for those of you who are maybe interested in supporting the show, but also aren't interested in being in like a festival environment or a packed comedy room or something like that. So I understand some of you have social anxiety. I understand some of you are not interested in live shows. And for those of you who want to support the show in that way, we're going to be starting up a little Patreon. I haven't quite figured out Patreon system yet and what sort of tiers we're going to have, but there'll be some tiers on there, and one of the tier levels will include a bonus story. So today we're going to have our first bonus story on Patreon that'll go up around the same time as the podcast. And if people are interested in that sort of thing, great. We're going to do more bonus stories. People aren't interested in that sort of thing, no worries. We'll see how we go. But until then, of course, I will be the bearer of weird news. Let's get into the headlines. The World Cup is underway, and it wouldn't be a World Cup without a bracket elimination chart. Early battles that we are anticipating are streaker arrested versus journalists arrested slash censored slash murdered, a strong early contender for the 2022 World Cup. Normally streaker is a strong contender for the championship, to be honest with you, but Without beers in the stands, it seems journalists arrested may run away with it this year. Of course, we've got secret police take out a drunk versus sponsor is screwed by a sudden change in the deal. Our sponsor is screwed is a fresh but powerful contender in 2022 with an early victory removing major sponsor Budweiser early on, and is this year's dark horse to take out the entire World Cup. Of course, a very strong yearly contender. Is this still happening? Will verse rivals Celebratory Riot out in the streets? Celebratory Riot has had many strong years with big wins, but it seems without close allies drunk escorted out, it could be a quiet year for the powerhouse team. The NBA has banned off-white uniforms because they cause glitches with their new digital ads. Word is next it will be greens, then cyan, and eventually all the players will be gone, and it will just be two advertising mascots playing against one another wearing plain grey smocks to maximise advertising space. It's beginning to look a lot like dystopian capitalism, with a split in half artificial Christmas tree in every store. See, this makes sense. Nobody can afford a whole house anymore, and we're lucky to get a half of one, really, so a half a tree is probably more than they even need, realistically. Plus, you can pair it with other new fantastic space-saving decorations, like this shattered tree star. No longer will it take up space of an entire star. No, 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 you can spread the Christmas joy all over the house, placing it in every and any corner that you can find, spreading the shards of this shattered Christmas star. There's also inflatable Santa, but with a hole in him, so he doesn't take up too much space. Just roll him up and tuck him in the corner as tightly as possible. Gingerbread houses will be downgraded to gingerbread tents this year. Snowmen will be mounted down to just the water and then stored in a little bucket with a hat on top. So that should be a nice space saver. And half a Rudolph! Of course, the good thing about the half a Rudolph decoration is you get the choice of which way you want it to be bisected. You know, down the middle or across the waist there. And it's done right there in front of you. It's like you get to pick right in front. It's great. Nice space saver. A self-proclaimed time traveler from the year 2906 has claimed he knows that our universe has a creator and that they keep our universe in a jar. Honestly, with how things are going currently, I'm happy to believe him because it's just nice to know that we survive until 2906. What a joy. NASA isn't as willing as I am to believe in the future, as they have sent the Artemis 1 rocket to the moon to establish a long-term human presence, including construction of a lunar base camp. Things have gotten so bad, even NASA is going back to the moon, just in case. It's one small backslide for man, one giant retreat for mankind. Former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has barely been seen in public since failing to win re-election. Rather than admit that he is sitting around in his official residence moping, that being an absolute cunt failed to garner for him productive results, and that he hasn't come out of his sulky corner for over a few weeks now, Vice President Hamilton Morero told his press this week it was because of an infection on his leg, explaining he can't wear pants, explaining he cannot wear pants. You want him to come here wearing Bermuda shorts? And you know what? Morale is not wrong. Nobody would respect a former world leader if they were seen post their reign rocking a pair of ball shorts and making it look good. So we'd love to go through a couple of fashion options for Bolsonaro to rock in public while maintaining the dignity afforded to his office, protecting his legs and looking good. A nice set of Thai Fisher pants. They're loose in the legs and they afford him that I just went to Asia for the first time and took a bunch of drugs look. It's very chic right now. You could put on some grey tracksuit pants, full leg coverage and just a hint of bulge at the front, while offering a bit of a breeze for his poor infection. Culottes. Perfect for people who liked the dress silhouette but have no desire to wear a dress. Culottes will allow Bolsonaro to maintain his level of toxic masculinity while protecting his pins. A robe, yes, of course, a classic of the hyper-masculine. The robe can be monogrammed in a gratuitous style fashion, which will distract from the extended length of towel attached to the bottom of the robe to cover the bottom of his legs. Of course. And your classic muumuu, a stylish, shapeless bag that you can slap over parts of your body when you don't want others to look, but you still want to appear to partake in fashion. So lots of options out there for you, Bolsonaro. I don't know why you're hiding away. It has been revealed US Department of Homeland Security Acting Secretary Chad Wolf launched a failed operation that ensnared hundreds, possibly thousands, of protesters in a sweeping effort before the 2020 election to bolster Trump's spurious claims about a terrorist organization. It's pretty extraordinary lengths that the department went to prove democracy was in danger. They really wanted to expose a force for stagnation and failure of democracy and democratic measures. They just needed to stand out of the way and let the Democrats take power. After Adidas ended its sneaker partnership with Ye last month, following the musician's anti-Semitic comments, Adidas has continued to sell the sneaker and apparel line. They simply removed the Yeezy name and branding. A desperate attempt to make the public forget about your controversy by changing the name of it while doing nothing to address the internal problem, or, as they know of it in the tech sector, entering the metaverse. The Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras is facing pressure to stop police officers from conducting decency checks on parade participants. Ah yes, the New South Wales Police. If there is one group who knows about how to best present yourself in public, it's the New South Wales Police. The Albanese government's National Anti-Corruption Commission is on track to pass the federal parliament by Christmas, despite ongoing concerns from integrity campaigners. Looks like we're getting this year's naughty list ready. No wonder we need to dig up a little more coal. It's going to be a big list, and we're going to have a lot of coal to hand out. Analysis examining the carbon impact of billionaires' investments in carbon-intensive businesses revealed the super-rich emit greenhouse gases at a level equivalent to the whole of France. Talk about the top 1%. Woo! Upon hearing the analysis, the billionaires rushed to change their ways, offering to pay for the necessary work to undo the impact that they have directly wrought through the excess wealth that they have extracted from their employees. And I'm sorry, that was a very mean lie. They immediately opened a PR campaign telling individuals how this was all their fault for not being better people, and if you wanted to live on their new planet, Earth Plus, formerly Mars, you better stop being so damn selfish. The car crash that we love to watch, that is Musk's takeover of Twitter, continues as Elon Musk told Twitter staff that bankruptcy is a real possibility, as next year Twitter could face billions more in losses. You gotta love it. One of his biggest ideas to redeem the platform is tweaking Twitter to become a digital payments platform. Yeah, that's right. Musk wants to turn Twitter into a digital bank. Look, it's a smart move from Musk, as a bankrupt bank gets a government bailout, and government money is the only way that Musk really knows how to keep his businesses afloat. Not to mention, turning into a bank means Twitter won't have to act any more ethically. If anything, they can get away with more unethical behavior as a bank. Maybe set up accounts for some dead people and some terrorists. Seems to be the most popular bank MO these days. CBS News has suspended its use of Twitter in light of the uncertainty surrounding the platform under Musk. Which is weird, because as a news outlet, I thought that they were used to being in the middle of a shitstorm. The Scrabble Dictionary has embiggened by adding 500 new words after not having added any new words since 2018. The new list does not include any of the Notorious 200, a collection of 200 racial, ethnic, and otherwise offensive words you'll hear on Twitter. from an extended family member on Facebook, or after a few too many drinks at a family event, when someone insists that they're just asking questions, or on Fox News after dark. A report into the sports rot scandal released found that the Cabinet Minister Bridget McKenzie displayed some significant shortcomings in her oversight of the grants program, but found no evidence of pork barreling. Huh. Curious. Well, this is very embarrassing, because we've been banging on about this for the longest time. It's been a pretty damning indictment of the previous administration, to be honest. Maybe we owe them some sort of apology? Oh, but this... Hang on. This just in, quickly, before we do that, before we go to the apology. Who wrote the report? Oh, right. Turns out Morrison's own secret governance committee of the cabinet. Sorry. That story again. Former Prime Minister Scott Morrison's secret cabinet investigates Scott Morrison's government and finds that Scott Morrison is a cool guy whose friends and colleagues have never done anything wrong. How could they? After all, he's just a daggy dad, but he's also a totally cool guy at the same time. Moving on now to the bigger news, Victoria election fallout news to begin with. The unusual and illegal election of the dictator of the United Socialist Suburbs of Victoria, one Daniel Andrews, has shown how indoctrinated the suburbs are when they refuse to fight back against the illegal dictator who gave them all a single vote to decide if they'd keep him in power or not. A single vote? Is that all? What sort of madness is this? I think you'll find that every other election of any other kind gives people as many votes as they want. No wonder people saw the madness of his power grab. Now, granted, the move is an unusual one for a dictator. They generally just declare themselves dictator for life and get on with business. But I suppose the real key is to trick people into thinking they have what they want. Like every time J.K. Rowling tweets some new piece of Harry Potter lore, and fans have to smile and say, yes, yes, we always wanted wizards to magic away poop they just did on the floor, wherever they were standing. That's what makes these books so good. So, as of recording, the Victorian Legislative House is brimming with new Labour seats. 52 suburbs have joined the dictatorship, while the coalition have managed to liberate 24 suburbs, forming a resistance front. The Greens took 4, just for shits and giggles. Now, before we get into the fallout, I'm going to talk about one very specific and hilarious thing. Former Darren Hinch Chief of Staff and Shit Nickname Magazine's Man of the Century, Glenn the Preference Whisperer, Drury, has been a shadowy figure making money and manipulating democracy from a little thing called group voting tickets, which after the Western Australian 2021 election, Victoria is the last state in Australia to still use. Just quickly, in Victoria, you get the legislative paper, the massive picnic blanket of a paper, and you can vote either a single box above the line or you can number some boxes below the line. And this changed recently so that now you only need to number a minimum of 5 boxes after outbreaks of repetitive stress injuries across the state, after voters were forced to write a small novel just to have a little bit of control over their preferences. But the problem is, if you choose to vote one above the line, and it isn't Labour or Liberals, chances are you're going to be swept up into the terrible world of group voting tickets, where the parties get to decide where your vote goes. And the parties make all sorts of deals. So, like, in order to get some parties, they'll preference each other to keep their bitter rivals out of power. Right? You know, pretty standard stuff. Wheeling and dealing, so it's all politicking, right? But then enter Glenn Drury, who saw an opportunity to make money. He has been taking payments of $5,000 a week with a $50,000 success fee from minor parties to form an alliance called The Family, which is most likely an allusion to the Mafia, but in reality it reads more like the Manson Family, in that It's a bit of a cult, and the leader tries to keep his hands clean by not doing any of the dirty work. The family makes deals to preference itself and to catch the votes of those who believe in the power of the people to effect change, but think marking four extra boxes under the line is too much work for them. He is trying to rein man the election results in favour of minor parties who pay him, and not ones who will necessarily benefit you in any way. Victorians may remember Ricky Muir of the Australian Motoring Enthusiast Party. Well, his party polled at just 0.5% of the vote, a value so small it couldn't even fill the MCG. It's less people than there are fans of the Magpies. Imagine letting the membership of the Magpies pick a seat in the Legislative Council. That just means that Peter Dacos would have been a Member of Parliament. Now, he might have been good at AFL, but you can't let a man with a mullet that makes him look like the real-life inspiration for the Eric Bana character Porter have a proportion of control of the state. Stay in your lane, Dacos. Honestly, guys, this is such a wide-ranging issue that it has brought a wide range of parties together to stand against it. Parties with no other allegiance, like the Greens, the United Australia Party, the Liberal Party, even the election fans' crumpet, Anthony Green, is against group voting tickets. And do you want to upset Anthony Green? I don't think you do. So it is my pleasure to let you know that the preference whisperer himself got hustled in what he is calling the most elaborate sting in minor party history. And what I'm calling the inevitable third act betrayal in every grift in history. Full props to the Animal Justice Party's state election manager and lead candidate in the Southern Metropolitan Region, Ben Schultz, who did a bold, last-minute deception worthy of an Ocean's 11-style short film. So, he spent months negotiating, receiving preferences from the family, only to skip out on reciprocal obligations at the last minute. It was, chef's kiss. Moving his preference votes to other parties last minute, just before the group voting tickets registration closed, yet still receiving all the preferences from nearly all of jury's clients. It was a delight. And working the other side of the room, the Australian Values Party leaked video of Drury in action attempting to make a deal with them to the media.
We've got to give the government, which will be the Andrews government, we've got to give them a crossbench they can work with. Now, I'm putting the horse before the cart. I shouldn't even be having this conversation with you. But if you are elected, we will be having some serious chats.
Yeah, understood.
But that's down the track.
So if the Liberals get in, though, you're afraid that these reforms will change?
Oh, they will.
Okay.
They will. I had an emissary come to me from the Libs a year ago in the height of COVID lockdowns. And this is a guy I know. He's was a senior staffer in the federal government that I had a lot of dealings with when I was chief of staff with Hinch. A lot of dealings with, and I like the guy. We get on well. We trust each other. And he said, we want you to do your best to get rid of Dan. It's the right thing to do for the community. You've got to do it. He was appealing to, you know, my sense of community and self. And I said, I agree. What's going on with these lockdowns is terrible. It's terrible. He said, so you're going to help? And I said, well, what you need to do is come back to me and say that the Liberals will make a public statement to say they're not going to get rid of the group voting ticket. Oh, they'll never do that. Then I'll never help.
Now, granted, the media in this instance is in big quotation marks, as it is of the Herald Sun, which listeners of this podcast will know is the flagship for Murdoch's Victorian arm. But guys, the enemy of my enemy can be a useful cudgel, and if it happens to harm my enemy when I use him as a cudgel, all the better. Realistically, none of these games actually impacted the historic rise of the third reign of the glorious dictator. They appear to have potentially stopped the sort of chicanery that led to your Ricky Muir's getting power, as no independent candidates managed to get a single seat in 2022. Former Victorian Labour Premier Steve Bracks really took time to hit home how ineffectual the Herald Sun smear campaign had been in this delightful clip.
There was 150 negative stories on the Labor Party by the Herald Sun. Well, I tell you what, Herald Sun, you've got absolutely zero influence.
And man, did all this reality piss off Sky News pundits. Let's do the fun stuff and look at some of the now classic tantrums from after the Victorian election. Andrew Bolt, the Crown Prince of Whinge, has come out with a distinct hot take. Andrew Bolt says Andrews should quit. Apparently Dan Andrews is wounded, probably fatally, despite his historic win, and should quit before it all catches up with him. He argued that the Premier knows his time is running out for a dignified exit that lets him retire as a winner into a well-paid job. Despite, apparently, with Andrew's election win, he will become Victoria's longest-serving ALP Premier in April, and a bronze statue of him will likely be erected outside of Parliament. But yeah, it's all closing in around him, Bolt. Don't worry. I'm pretty sure that if such a statue does exist, it will go on to be vandalised 100% of the time. But if it acts as sort of like a scarecrow for the brainless conspiracy theorists, or like a wicker man for conspiracy anger, allowing them to pour their anger into the statue and not actually hurt a real person, that's great. You know what? That's fantastic. Let it happen. I'm all for it. We can say that it's an art piece. We can just say that it's an art piece in constant evolution, like Hosier Lane. You know, it always changes the art on the alleyway walls. We can call it the Wicker Dan. The call to arms seems to be the same all over. Peter Credlin has accused the Liberal Party of not being very liberal.
But the basic problem for the Liberal Party in each of Australia's four most recent elections is that it hasn't stood for much that's recognisably liberal, and it hasn't fought for anything that's recognisably liberal. In Western Australia, it tried to out-green the Greens and was annihilated, just two lower house seats of the parliament. That's it. In South Australia, they lost office after just one term.
A very confusing statement for anyone not from Australia, as we have come to associate the word liberal with conservative drudgery. So for our foreign listeners, the Liberals are the Conservative Party, our version of the Tories or Republicans. The party who is increasingly out of date and tries to bludgeon the poor with the size of its wealth. You know the times. In this instance, not being liberal enough means not being conservative enough. They are encouraging members to double down on such principles as bullying the poor until they become rich enough to bully a poor of their own in a cycle of abuse. Rowan Dean demands the Liberals should reject every MP who does not espouse core Liberal values.
Why they lost? That's the whole point. If you don't stand for if you are the Conservative Party in Australia, well, they're idiots, aren't they? If you are the Conservative Party in Australia, the party of Menzies, and you don't stand for solid Conservative values, absolutely fore and front, then you are going to lose. Peter Dutton, listen and watch. You are going to lose. We've seen it in every single election. When Liberals move to the left, when Liberals become Liberal Light or Linos, Liberals in name only, woke Liberals, Birmingham Liberals, brag Liberals, you will lose.
Liberal values are homophobia, climate denial, refugee scapegoating, some light racism. They aren't going to step on the toes of like One Nation after all. There's also religious values, but not the important ones like feed and help the poor, only the ones that allow them to discriminate against anyone who doesn't fit the standard mold. You know how it is. It's a confusing take, as people have said the reason that they didn't vote for the coalition is their refusal to take climate change seriously. Yeah, apparently all the other stuff is fine, by the way. But obviously we can't oppress refugees and deny the LGBTQIA+ community their fundamental human rights and grandstand about religion while ignoring the fundamentals of the very religion that you claim to follow on a planet that's so warm. No, we couldn't do that. That'll never work. the warmth will maybe cause water to rise and that might impact my property and then I'll be less rich. And if the Pacific Islands get sunk, well, we will have an influx of poor brown refugees, which is fundamentally against what the Liberal Party is all about. Unless, of course, we're getting those refugees to come over here temporarily. Rowan has become so disconnected from reality that he thinks that there's going to be a mass exodus of Liberal voters from lefty Victoria.
We're going to see, we have to see in this country, leaders of the sort of Giorgia Meloni, Ron DeSantis and others who win extraordinarily well when they espouse solid conservative values. But the other final point is that let's see in Australia competition between the states. Let's see what happens. You mentioned, James, California and New York. Well, what's happened there? You have seen people fleeing California and New York to go and live in Florida. People leave and flee left-wing states to go to conservative states. It never goes the other way around. You watch the exodus from Victoria,
Final thought is mine.
You know, like the way that everyone says that they're going to move to Canada if Trump gets elected, or the way that they say that they're going to leave the country if X gets elected. You know, even if they followed through, at this point, I'm not sure where they would flee to. A cursory glance of Australian map leaves conservatives looking to flee the state very few options. Unless... No, it's crazy talk. Unless they will go with Rowan and Alan Jones, who fled the dictatorship of the United Suburbs of Victoria for the peninsula, and they move to the centre of the country and occupy some of the desert, forming a new super conservative state. Murdochia. A state where there is no Centrelink, no government support. Immigrants and refugees are banned unless they're picking fruit, or maybe building or cleaning a house. Someone has to keep the place clean after all, right? The minimum wage doesn't exist, and as it is a desert landscape with no rain or bushland, they can delude themselves into believing that climate change is a hoax because the weather is always the same. Makes a lot of sense, actually. Can we convince them to maybe make their way out there and start their libertarian utopia? I'd be into that. Moving on to drab capitalism news. Adobe Suite, the most expensive way to drain your computer's battery. Just when you thought it couldn't get any more expensive, Adobe has decided to go to war with Pantone. The fallout from this corporate war means in December 2021, Adobe announced it would be removing Pantone colors from its app, unless users were willing to pay $15 a month for a license for Pantone color books. The new app will of course go through a rebrand and will now be known as Adobe Minus, to better reflect the new restrictions of the app plus the naming conventions of apps these days. The colours will also be removed from the logo to stay philosophically consistent. Otherwise, we'd be forced to accuse them of engaging in hypocrisy, and no company has ever been hypocritical before, so this would be a significant first. Both companies are blaming each other for firing the first salvo, as Adobe's chief product officer Scott Belsky has tweeted that Pantone asked Adobe to remove the colours, as they want to charge customers directly. Meanwhile, Pantone has publicly said it felt Adobe wasn't keeping pace with the plethora of new colours it released. Because subscription capitalism is a relentless vacuum into which all of our dollars must be sucked and all portions of experiences maximised for profits, do you wish to experience joy? Well, that'll be $30 a month. So basically, medication, right? Oh. I think I just realised that basic medications are a subscription fee to not feeling sad. But then, a hero came along. Today's People's Champion is Stuart Semple, creator of Freetone, a totally free Adobe plugin that contains 1,280 Pantone-ish colours, including digital versions of TIFF Blue, The Pinkest Pink, Incredibly Easy Klein, and incredibly Klein-ish blue, and Black 3.0, the blackest black. 4 days after its release, Free Tone had been downloaded more than 22,000 times. You love it. You love to see it. Semple says they're literally holding the colours hostage and fears that the move to charge for Pantone colours will make it harder for young artists with less disposable income. Which, to be honest, is the story of art nearly from the beginning, and definitely all artists that you've ever heard of. Fortunately, artists always have one option for becoming more well-known and having the value of their art skyrocket, and that is dying. And they can continue to benefit the rich by doing this. So that's always a plus. Adobe spokesperson Erin DeLeva says that the company is currently looking at ways to lessen the impact on our customers. Presumably those explorations have deftly avoided looking behind the door clearly labelled, "Don't charge your customers for individual colours." But to be fair, usually if I saw a big, obvious and well-lit door clearly and obviously labelled, easiest way to get out of this mess and minimise reputation damage, I'd also assume that it was a trap. Moving on now to problematic international relation news. The nefarious MBS. Yes, the Prime Minister, simultaneously known as Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, is back in the news after the Biden administration has surprisingly determined the Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince / Prime Minister should be granted immunity in the case brought against him by the fiancé of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the rights group Khashoggi founded Democracy for the Arab World Now, who the CIA report said was murdered at the prince's direction. Which is to say, a little bit awkward given the State Department said the United States government has expressed its grave concerns regarding Saudi's agents responsible for Jamal Khashoggi's murder, and Biden himself said, "I think it was a flat-out murder," in a 2019 CNN town hall. Biden even vowed to make a pariah out of Saudi rulers over the 2018 killing of Khashoggi, which is a very impressive backflip for a man in his 80s. So what happened? What has turned Biden from a tough-talking grandpa sharing stories of every fight he's ever been in to a recruit to Cirque du Soleil's octogenarian showcase? Well, firstly, the sharp-eared among you may have noticed that MBS, among the many things that he already has, including a $500 million yacht, a $300 million French chateau, and a $450 million Leonardo da Vinci painting, has also got a fancy new title. Yeah, that's right. He's become the Prime Minister of Saudi Arabia. Because what do you get the man who can get himself anything? The one thing he really needs.
Diplomatic immunity.
Yes, after being named the kingdom's prime minister in a cabinet reshuffle by King Salman in September of this, the year of our protecting the rich and powerful, 2022, I have to assume he was a big fan of Lethal Weapon 2. Why else would he need
diplomatic immunity?
At the very least, he must be keen on Mel Gibson, right? Because apparently, in private conversations, MBS has likened Saudi Arabia before the Saudis' conquest in the 18th century to the anarchic wasteland of the Mad Max films. Respectful. Presumably meaning that it was a lawless wasteland in a desperate resources war in which the most brutal rose to the top and sliced out a kingdom built on the withholding of those resources and forcing their underlings to perpetually struggle in the burning desert. So maybe someone could have got him one of those Warboy flame guitars and trucks with the speakers attached instead. That feels like an appropriate gift for him. But the heart wants what it wants, and I guess diplomatic immunity is pretty sweet. Bin Salman has denied the allegations that he ordered the murder of Khashoggi because the journalist said nasty things about him that hurt his little baby feelings, saying, "If that's the way we did things, Khashoggi would not even be among the top 1,000 people on the list." Woof. So yeah, problem solved, I think. Clearly, we all take the oil despot at his threatening word that he didn't do it because he would be busy murdering so many other people. It'd just take too long to get to Khashoggi. It just so happens that as Crown Prince, Bin Salman was not entitled to sovereign immunity, which would normally just include a head of state or a head of government or a foreign minister, none of which Bin Salman was. And it was merely a few days before the Biden administration was supposed to weigh in on the question of immunity that Bin Salman was promoted to Prime Minister by his father, King Salman, who would normally hold that position. Definitely nothing sus about that, no need to be concerned. Some say it's just as well, because despite being a purely ceremonial position built on nothing, it might be enough to distract MBS from following through on his 170-kilometre long horizontal city, Neom. Nobody wants a long city, MBS. Go back to what you are good at, secretly murdering your detractors. Just not me, eh? Just putting that out there, not me. I say the murder of some journalists wouldn't go astray. And would you like to consider taking down the Murdochs? I definitely didn't call for the murder of them, but I wouldn't be averse to it. That should cover me legally. While the US government's finding of immunity for the prince is non-binding, and a judge will ultimately decide whether to grant immunity, it angered rights activists and risked blowback on Democratic lawmakers. Biden, as president, has been busy bumping fists with Prince Mohammed, like the cool non-murderous dude that he really is, back on his July trip to the kingdom. The US is working to persuade Saudi Arabia to undo a series of cuts in oil production, a move seen as undercutting efforts by the US and its allies to punish Russia, especially after a surge in global oil prices triggered by all the things, you know, just all the things, all the Russia invading Ukraine things, you know, how Europe be, always be teetering on the edge of World War something, Europe be warring, oh yeah, Europe be warring. Since then, the prince has been re-embraced by Western leaders, proving once and for all why we should have been focusing on solar and renewable powers, so that we can tell the oil kingdoms they can fuck right off when they, to put it lightly, behave poorly on an international stage. Biden speaking after he authorized release of a declassified version of the intelligence community's findings on Prince Mohammed's role in the killing, argued at the time that there was no precedent for the US to move against the leader of a strategic partner. Which is pretty disappointing, but much better than the original statement that he released, which simply read, "Eh, what are you gonna do? Murder him? He isn't a democratically elected socialist leader. Now that we could do." You definitely organize one of those. The US military has long safeguarded Saudi Arabia from external enemies in exchange for Saudi Arabia keeping global oil markets afloat. And sovereign immunity is a concept rooted in international law that holds that states and other officials are protected from some legal proceedings in other foreign states' domestic courts. Especially because upholding the concept of sovereign immunity helps ensure that American leaders in turn do not have to worry about being hauled into foreign courts to face lawsuits in other countries, which would definitely be a complication in the mix, as they'd have a lot of court dates to attend and would likely have a clash or two in their calendar. Like, you can't be at an international criminal court in South America and in the Middle East at the same time. Fred Ryan, the publisher and the CEO of the Washington Post, slammed the decision, saying that President Biden is failing to uphold America's most cherished values. Those most American of values being murdering international political figures and needlessly shielding the rich. So it's arguable that they're at least meeting half of their international reputation. Moving on now to climate reparation news. COP27 recently passed, and while the outcome of the meeting as a whole is still debatable, one very unexpected and hopefully, he asked with an uncertain tone, hopefully optimistic outcome. For the first time, the nations of the world have decided to help pay for the damage the overheating world is inflicting on poor countries, establishing a fund for what negotiators call loss and damage to help developing countries bear the immediate costs of climate-fueled events such as storms and floods. Seems it's going to be reparations for climate change and nothing else. If anyone else feels that they have legitimate concerns or reasons to receive reparations, please send those concerns to the Reparations Council at Historic Atrocities, care of the White Privilege Council for Historic Wrongs We Will Ignore, and we will get back to you in time. If you can include an explanation of how the historic wrong you are correcting will benefit the future of white people, and please don't write reputation rehab, as it has been considered and promptly ignored. At the White People Council for Historic Wrongs, we will ignore your request for future PR stunts. It's just not how we do things. In keeping with tradition, they finished the climate talks without further addressing the root cause of those disasters, the burning of fossil fuels. But we are doing what rich people do best, throwing money at a situation so that it will definitely solve the problem. As we learn from one of the 20th century's greatest philosophers, more money, no problems. Praise be to the teachings of Biggie. However, many of the more contentious issues regarding the fund were pushed into talks to be held next year, when a transitional committee will make recommendations for countries to then adopt at the COP 2028 climate summit in November 2023, and what we are calling the COP27 can-kicking amendment. Annie Dasgupta, president of the environmental think tank World Resources Institute, said this loss and damage fund would be a lifeline for poor families whose houses are destroyed, farmers whose fields are ruined, and islanders forced from their ancestral homes. Pakistan Climate Minister Sheri Rehman, referencing the one-third of her nation that was submerged this summer by floods, has started using the motto, "What went on in Pakistan will not stay in Pakistan." This statement was maybe the most worrying for the UK, who drew up the previous borders for India and Pakistan, which have, to put it lightly, caused a few problems in their time, and maybe is the real reason that King Charles didn't show up to COP27, despite his previous penchant for saving the planet. But like all climate financials, it's one thing to create a fund and another to get money flowing in and out. The developed world has still not kept its 2009 pledge to spend $100 billion a year in other climate aid, designed to help poor countries and nations develop green energy and adapt to future warming. While major emerging economies such as China would not initially be required to contribute, that option remains on the table and will be negotiated over the coming years, with the language implying that countries that were classified as developing 30 years ago, but which are now among the biggest historic emitters, including China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia, would need to pay along with the historically rich countries. The argument includes a veiled reference to the benefits of natural gas as low-emission energy, despite many nations calling for a phase-down of natural gas, which does contribute to climate change. Which makes us here in Australia doubly glad Scott Morrison didn't get back into power. He loves gas the same way that Brett Kavanaugh loves beer. He loves it!
Yes, we drank beer. My friends and I, the boys and girls, yes, we drank beer. I liked beer. Still like beer.
Chris Bowen has called for the strongest possible action to limit global heating to 1.5 degrees centigrade and backed the establishment of a fund to help the poor deal with the unavoidable damage from worsening extreme weather, which is why we have committed to the further building of 27 coal mines. We need to start making money, guys, fast, as we are as committed to this as we can be, and we need money because we are very responsible for a lot of this damage. Now, despite suggestions Australia was outright opposed, Bowen said he was very attracted to the creation of a fund that drew money from a broad range of donors, worked in conjunction with multilateral development banks, including a reformed World Bank, and focused on helping the most vulnerable of all. It is much easier than phasing out fossil fuels and committing to lasting change and saving the planet. We are Australia, the country of the eternal summer. We are trying to increase tourism to the country by the decrease of seasons in Australia, changing our seasons into summer and Mad Max summer, allowing us to subsidise the loss of fossil fuel income with tourism income. Now, at many stages, a deal looked impossible to reach, as in the final hours, countries wrangled over single words in an outcome that spanned issues from the 1.5 degree centigrade temperature goal and phasing out of fossil fuels, the needs and rights of Indigenous people, the protection of nature, and how to engineer a just transition to clean energy for those economically dependent on fossil fuels. Rich nations were threatening to simply declare bankruptcy after first hiding their economic surpluses in some sort of Cayman Island bank account, then turning around and demanding that the Caymans, with all this new mysterious found wealth, would need to pay the most money. I mean, where else did they get all that money from? Despite Pakistan's Environment Minister, Sherry Rehman, reassuring the establishment of the fund is not about dispensing charity. Instead, using the language of the portfolio-heavy parts of the world, explaining, guys, this is clearly just a down payment on the longer investment of our joint futures. However, Peter Dutton, in typical Peter Dutton style, freaked out that there would be a giving of money that didn't include him or allow him to buy more houses, demanding Australia not compensate other countries for accumulating climate disasters. Reminding everyone that he has had a plan for years for climate refugees, that being allowing their countries to drown, putting their citizens in camps on nearby islands, assuming that those nearby islands haven't already drowned in the ocean, and failing that, well, returning to classic Australian values and turning Tasmania back into a prison colony where the refugees will live until they are needed for national fruit picking services. Simple. And finally, freedom news. Donald Trump, the former steak mogul turned more successful social media manager than Elon Musk, is back in the news again after making an equal parts surprising, and not at all surprising, declaration that America should terminate the Constitution in order to overturn the 2020 election and reinstate him to power. Posting on his copy and paste poor man's Twitter, which has yet to cost him $44 billion, Truth Social, he wrote, "Do you throw the presidential election results of 2020 out and declare the rightful winner, or do you have a new election?" A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. a wildly unexpected and totally predictable turn from the former university owner, who is still the de facto leader of the Republican Party, as it simultaneously throws him under bus after bus while he stubbornly refuses to die like a killer at the end of a horror film, or like a zombie chicken after having its head cut off, an unstoppable creature who has absolutely no control over what it does. The Republican Party are famously very in favour of the American Constitution, generally choosing to wield it like a riot officer would wield a shield, both as a defence of themselves and as a blunt object to harm their foes. So, directly attacking the means of their power is a strange play. While some elements of the Constitution have proven to be the bane of the party of freedom and suppression, such as, the 13th Amendment, which, of course, abolished slavery, and the 19th Amendment, which allows women to write on the same terms as men, but they certainly love those First and Second Amendments. They're really, really in love with them. So attempting to tear down the Constitution realistically means Trump is coming for your guns, Republicans. Everything that you hold dear, your freedom of expression to say racist comments, your freedom of religious oppression of women, and your freedom to shoot people who you disagree with, you spent so much time afraid of Obama that you didn't realize the murderer was already in the backseat of your car. Or maybe I'm being unfair. Maybe after the rules of society are torn up and he's put in place as the new leader, he will diligently put back the system that he claimed was false, had failed, and was not making anybody happy. I don't know. Seems likely. I mean, it isn't making anybody happy, but, you know, not for the reasons that he says. I certainly don't miss waking up in the morning to a full report of everything that he has spent the day shoving up his ass, how it felt, who watched him do it, and what words of encouragement they used when they suggested he could go a little bit deeper and that he could fit more in than any other person who'd ever lived. But for some reason, I'm feeling skeptical of the whole thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting older and no longer have the exciting, exploratory, rebellious spark of youth. Maybe he's changed from the man who refused to pay for contract work that had been done in his many businesses and was now an upstanding member of society after a visit from three ghosts who showed him the error of his ways. And only as president, he can be the most impactful force for change in the world. So he has to get in at all costs, even if it looks like a selfish power grab in the face of consequences for his actions for the first time in his life. After all, Trump said he was financially supporting some of the January 6th defendants and promised that he would issue pardons and a government apology to those being prosecuted, like himself, if he were re-elected. And to be honest with you guys, he has never financially supported anyone before. He can barely financially support himself. His businesses keep going bankrupt, and he keeps finding himself in more and more precarious financial relationships. So I got a good feeling about this one, guys. And if there is one person in society who deserves another chance, it's Trump. I mean, 90th time's a charm, am I right? Alright guys, thanks a lot. Thanks so much for listening to the show, making it all the way to the end. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, do all the appropriate things. Five stars if you're listening to it as a podcast. Thumbs up or share it anywhere you like if you're listening to it as a YouTube video. Whatever platform you feel is appropriate, feel free to leave us comments. That all helps with the algorithm. If you know someone who you think would enjoy this sort of stuff, share it with them. If you want to support the podcast, again, please, I think at this point the best way to do it is to come out to the live shows. My show, Wage Against the Machine, is happening in all sorts of festivals. Melbourne International Comedy Festival, Newcastle Fringe, Wellington Fringe, and more to come. And what's more, I have the bonus Patreon story for anyone who's interested in checking out our Patreon. So please, do all of the things that you feel you want to do. And thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate your time. Goodbye. Look after yourselves. Have fun.